Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 100-Year Real Estate Investor. We're your hosts, Jake and Gino, and this is the show dedicated to long-term personal financial engineering. Gino, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Jake. How you doing, bro?
Always making it happen, big man. Today, we welcome back 100-year co-founder Teresa Kuhn. She is a specialist in working with 100-year real estate investors and has helped clients for the past 35 years. Today, we're discussing reducing risk. Teresa, how's it going?
Hey, great. Always happy to be here with you too.
Teresa, this is an important show because what we've been hearing, you know, in the news over the past several years, risk, you know, more risk, more return. Should all of your dollars be at risk?
Well, I would say absolutely not, right? But the world, you know, Wall Street teaches in order to create wealth, your dollars have to be at risk. But do they ever tell you what is that allocation of risk to safe money? Typically not. And under the personal financial engineering model that we talk about all the time here at 100 Year Real Estate Investor, we suggest that people look at their balance sheet and look at every dollar, because every dollar needs a job. And what dollars are you allocating towards risk or to be on the offensive, to go chase return? And what dollars are in the safe money job, right? That's on the defensive. And so my answer is absolutely not.
Look at the picture. You got soldiers going out in the battlefield, throwing spears, cutting people up with swords. And then you got some protecting the wall. Is that what you're telling me right now?
Beautiful analogy. Yeah, absolutely. And okay. And those on the defensive protecting the wall, they've got multiple jobs, right? They're in reserves in case, you know, crap hits the fan, right? They're there to protect the offense if things start going wrong. You know, when the markets are volatile, having money in reserve gives you a mental advantage to know, you know what? I can stay the course because look what I've got over here in my defense, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's many, many components to having money and safety.
And Jake, we did a podcast with Andrew Cordell detailing this. Go back and listen to the show with Andrew Cordell on the rules of money. He makes a great analogy from Kevin Leary talking specifically about this. And this is one of the rules of money, having money in reserves and making sure that every dollar has a specific function. So Teresa's laid it out beautifully. If you want to get more information on the rules of money and why the 100-year strategy works and why the wealthy use the strategy, go back and listen to Andrew Cordell's podcast.
Wait a second here. Teresa, are you suggesting that the markets have been volatile lately?
I think so, yes. And not only the equity markets, not only Wall Street, of course, internationally, real estate, you know, real estate's been going up, right? But you guys tell me, does that feel off to you? Do you feel some volatility coming? Do you feel like the banks are going to start maybe clamping down on credit? Like, you tell me about real estate.
I'll jump in here first, Jake. And I think it's important that what Teresa said, you need to have some money in reserves because the markets will pull back. And if you don't have that money in reserve, then you will not be able to take advantage of the current situation. If you're a little levered up and there is a downturn and there's an opportunity to make a buy and you don't have that opportunity, that's when you become wealthy, when there are those opportunities. So you definitely need money on the side. We call it CapEx reserves. In real estate, I just call it my savings bucket in my personal financial engineering.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example. When COVID hit, everyone thought this was the, you know, catastrophic event that Teresa's kind of referring to. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is what we didn't see it coming, and this is what it was. Well, for many real estate investors, actually things got better. And so we still have a large team, and they were coming to us when we have our quarterly planning meetings saying, what is the plan? They're freaking out. You know, younger folks these days really want to know exactly what's going on. They want a voice in it. And so Gino and I are sitting and looking at each other. It's like, we're kind of ready. We're prepared for this. Okay. We're built for this. You know, and here's for all the real estate investors out there. You need to have a baseline of cash in your account. Some people are out there saying, I don't know how much money I'm making on my apartments. Look, it starts with a baseline of cash. It can be 30% over your mortgage every month, all in, right? You know, escrow and everything, amortizing. But then you have reserves behind that. Okay. And those are for repairs, a rainy day. Oh shit, the bank forgot the escrow. This has happened. Okay. These things do come up. You never know what's going to get thrown at you. And behind that, you have insurance, life insurance, whole life insurance. It goes on and on. So there's a defense, you know, there's a wall being built there to insulate and protect yourself. The world may be a little kooky right now. Things may turn, things may go bad. You don't know. We're not predicting, we're not saying this is what's going to happen, but why not be prepared and protect yourself? So literally step back, sit back, say, okay, what's going on right now? world may be a little shaky. Am I prepared? Do I have money in reserves? Am I protected with the right insurance policies? You need to make sure, because if things do turn, the reason people got burned in 08 was they were over-levered. They didn't have protection standing behind them. Okay. You don't want to be those people that lever the whatever, you know, offensive word I can use and get burned. Okay. So that's the first step. But getting back to reducing risk, when we're talking about a policy being created, a whole life policy being created, who's really rolling the dice here? Is it the person that's purchasing the policy, you know, the insurance company? Where's the risk there?
Well, let's start with what's happening when you start a whole life policy, right? Basically, you've decided I have a risk. I have a risk that I plan on dying before I'm really old. And, you know, I want to make sure that my mortgages are paid off and my properties so I can leave my family whole. I want to make sure college is paid for. I want to make sure all these things are taken care of if I die prematurely. So there's a risk there. And basically what life insurance says is, all right, insurance company, I pay you a certain amount of money and I'm transferring that risk of me dying early to you, insurance company. The insurance company and the underwriters and the actuaries will study you. It's called the underwriting process, right? The application process to see if your risk that they're willing to take. They go through the underwriting process from a financial perspective, from a medical perspective, they make an offer. If you accept the offer and move forward with the insurance, now who's got that risk, right? And from a financial perspective, the day you make your first premium, the policy is issued, you die, that's the best return on your money.
No, I'm talking about the insurance company.
It's bad for the insurance company.
That's right.
Good for you living. From a financial perspective. You're dead. Not that great, but hey, you made one payment and you now have, you know, 50,000% return on your money, right? Mm-hmm. So that's been established. Now, the type of policies that we use and the type of companies that we use, very specific, mutual insurance companies, right? Mm-hmm. They have guarantees. They are guaranteeing a certain percentage of growth. It's called increase in cash value. And they are guaranteeing that if you die, they're going to pay. So when we're talking about risk, who's got the risk in that scenario, right? You've transferred that risk to the insurance company. Mm-hmm. Is it 1,000% that they're going to pay? Well, the disclaimer from a compliant perspective is, hey, it's based on the financial ability of the company, right? To pay the death claim and give you your cash. Thankfully, the companies we work with have, you know, very, very high ratings. They are screen filtered. They're companies we use for a long time. They pay dividends for the last 100+ years. I mean, they're the best of the best. And so is that likely? I don't think so. I think it's extremely unlikely that they're not going to pay. And what's happened in the insurance industry, when a company's financial stability is uncertain, does not meet the requirements of the state insurance commissioner, then typically the company goes under receivership and another company takes over. And so for the mutual insurance companies and the companies we work with, extremely highly unlikely. I mean, they have paid dividends, again, for the last 100+ years. They've been around a very long time. When you think about the different economic environments that they've not only survived, but thrived, we're talking about world wars. We're talking about the Great Depression, the Great Recession, the great inflationary periods of time, you know, Wall Street bubbles crashing. And in fact, the more volatile the times, money flees safety. And whole life insurance and the kind of insurance that we work with is that kind of safe haven. So safe that the Federal Reserve allows its member banks to put their tier one capital, which is the safest capital, or the capital that has to be placed in a very safe instrument. They allow the banks to put their money in these type of policies.
Teresa, that leads me to my second question. Why have life insurance sales gone up during COVID?
Well, think about it. A couple reasons. Again, very volatile times. People are feeling uncertain. Do they want to take more risk with their money? No, they want to put their money in a safe place. That's number one. Number two, I can tell you personally, I've never experienced more death in the people that I know, clients, friends, family, their family members. There's a lot of talk about death these days, either it's COVID related or not. And so people are feeling like, shoot, Mm-hmm. If I get sick, I may become uninsurable. I don't have enough insurance, or I don't have the insurance that I want for my family. And so it's getting people to think, hey, I could be next, or something could be happen. Let me do some planning.
Love that.
One of the term policies that I also own, I had a 400% increase. They're estimating what my cost will be in 7 years when it burns off. And it's up 400% from the current fixed over 10. They're just playing the odds. And I mean, I get it and why it's happening, but it's not sustainable. You know, the term life is not a sustainable option. Get you while you're young, but I don't think you're ever going to get any benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jake, let me ask you this question. Who took the most risk when you bought that term policy?
The life insurance company, even though it's low, because ultimately the money is minimal, you know, to me on that. But if something did happen, it's a sizable thing. So, you know, like bad things could happen, go out and crazy event would happen. But I think they're at more risk than I am.
Well, 95% of term policies do not get paid on, by the way, number one. Number two, I would say it's you. You rented the insurance. In 7 years, you may not have any insurance. You may not be insurable. And your rates are going up. How much did you say?
400%.
Yeah.
So I guess for me, it's just I can afford the, because it's a minimal payment. It's not, you know, anything crazy, but it's not sustainable, I think, is the point that I was making. Like, I'm not going to, you know, carry that after the end of the term. So, you know, knock on wood, hopefully stay healthy. Everything's good, but still, it's just not it's renting. You make the great point. It's not a sustainable option for the long-term. And I think we're about long-termism here.
Jake, I think it's also where you were at the stage of your life where you're 7 or 10 years ago, you didn't have the financial intelligence. You didn't have the assets built up. You didn't have the ability to think of this as an asset. You didn't have the ability of long-termism. So as you've grown, as you've matured, you're like, okay, that was great for me back then. And I challenge everyone listening to this, wherever you are in your life, whether you're 23 years old or you're 73 years old, it's never too late to start to think about long-termism, because it will happen. And it really is the mindset of the rules of money. Are you renting it? Or are you owning it? You may need to rent it in the short term and maybe convert it as you get older. That may be an option as well, but always think about what the benefits are and who's profiting or who's benefiting from it. And then ultimately it is a long-term strategy. It's really for the long term. And I think when you were younger, you weren't thinking about it. I just need this coverage. I don't know any of the other benefits. Give me the cheapest, 100%, quickest solution.
Yes.
So yeah. I think as
but
you
now grown, at the end of it, I'm going to be opening up my pockets while looking down and finding lint. And there's going to be nothing to, you know, I've spent that money and now there's going to be nothing left. So that's the frustrating part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let me bring one more thing up, and not to pour salt on the wound, because, you know, we didn't know each other 7 years ago.
I don't like lighting money on fire, Teresa. Okay.
I know. And this is going to piss you off a little bit. Let me tell you something. You know, whatever you spent on that term insurance, there was an opportunity cost that's being lost that needs to be calculated. If you really want to know what that true cost of that term insurance was, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, it was cheaper in the short term. But if you were to calculate the opportunity cost at whatever rate of return you want to do, from the time that you got it all the way up to your life expectancy, right? Because that's money that you spent that you're never going to get back, hopefully, because you live.
Don't light money on fire over here. That's
don't sure. light money on
starts,
fire.
Starts to hurt. Talk to the folks about how whole life is actually being that defender on the wall and protecting your assets.
Wow. Okay. So we're talking about that analogy that it's the defense, right? Last soldier standing, last man standing. You want that money in reserves. It gives you just so much. Number one, life insurance, right? You die, it pays. Number two, you got living benefits, right? If you get sick, if you get disabled, if you've got critical care issues or long-term care issues, you can actually tap into that life insurance while you're living and draw it down, right? So if you're single and you're thinking, I don't need the life insurance, I'm single. Well, do you have a pool of money that you can tap into if you're disabled or seriously ill? Maybe, maybe not, right? From a reserve perspective, a parking lot perspective, you need a place to park money. You need a place for your CapEx account, right? This gives you so much more than a checking or savings account will ever give you. It's growing tax deferred. And if everything's done right, you can tap into it and take money out tax exempt, meaning that money never shows up on your tax return. You can have uninterrupted compounding when you tap into that money. You can take loans from your policy for any and all of your investments or college needs for your kids or financing vehicles, whatever you want. And you don't have to jump through the hoops of applying for a loan. It's just like taking equity out of one of your properties. What a pain in the butt it is to take equity out of your properties. You can take equity out of your policy and you're done in like 2 minutes, right? It's no big deal. If you want to know something else, depending on your state, you've got asset protection, right? In many states, creditor proof, bankruptcy proof. I can go on and on, but you all get the point.
Trudeau protected too, right? The folks in Canada, when they got their assets frozen, the whole life folks were not feeling the pain as much.
And that's, you know, politically, it's interesting how if you're in Canada and you were not in Trudeau's favor, your money was protected inside of your policy. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Who would have predicted that? Right. And it goes back to, you know, my old adage, the quality of your life is in direct proportion, quality of options.
Jake, can I make a little analogy to what you're talking about? I guess a story that I had when I first started my financial journey years ago, financial planner sat me down and he said, you're an asset. All of your assets, think of them as a castle. And your insurance is basically the moat that's surrounding the castle. And as your assets grow, you need to protect yourself more. We had renter's insurance when we started out. Then you have homeowner's insurance. Then you have an umbrella policy. The life insurance is just a natural progression of that. And if you can actually, instead of rent it, you can buy it and own it whole life for life. That'll just make you even that much stronger. It's great to have assets, but you need to protect yourself in a way with those assets. You've worked so hard all these years to build up the castle. And if there's no protection around that castle, then what happens? You're at risk of losing those assets. So all that hard work over the years just may go down the drain if you don't protect those assets. And I look at whole life as one of those components of that, of being that moat around the castle, protecting myself. I have the ability to tap into that moat today, but it'll be there for me for tomorrow as well, Jake.
And we're going to be talking more about that. It's not just life insurance, it's asset insurance.
Expand upon that.
Mm-hmm. Asset insurance, exactly what Gino said. The moat around your assets, all your assets are like a castle, and the insurance protects the castle, right? Mm-hmm. It protects your family if something happens to you. It protects your assets from the perspective of, you know, real estate is volatile, Wall Street is volatile. You've got all these investments. You know your cash is growing safely and securely inside of your whole life policy. And, you know, many people are thinking about retirement. You know, the whole retirement income Wall Street industry is about getting you up that retirement mountain. Right? It's all about getting you up the mountain. Well, do they ever talk about getting you down the mountain? Not really, because getting you down the mountain means you're taking money out. And they're not really interested in that model, right? And you're taking money out and you're getting taxed, right?
Yeah.
But as having the asset insurance, right? People who start spending down the money in their retirement, this is an asset that allows them to spend more and still leave money to their legacy if they choose to.
That's awesome.
So not all these insurance companies are equal. Do you see them as transactional or relational? What is your thought, Teresa?
Well, you know, it depends on the company. Again, our companies, mutual life insurance companies, very specific companies, not all mutual companies are created equal, right? But our companies, the policy holders participate in the profits. They're like owners of the mutual insurance company. Their interests are aligned. They are sitting at the same side of the table as the mutual insurance companies in terms of interest. The typical insurance company, they're a stock insurance company. They've got, right, they're sitting on one side of the table. The shareholders are benefiting from the profits of that insurance company, and the policyholders are seen as an expense, right, that takes away the more they give to the policyholders, the less that goes to the shareholders. So those owners of those policies are not sitting on the same side of the table as the stock insurance company administrators, right? Or the shareholders.
Think of it like a privately held ESOP, and like an employee stock ownership program versus a company that's publicly traded on Wall Street. It's much right. Different. Yeah.
Right. Great analogy.
Dad, anything else before we close today?
So Teresa, I'm sitting there and I'm contemplating whole life policy, but I'm stuck. I've heard so many bad things about whole life. It's a scam, this and that. What advice would you give to a listener right now to say, hey, you know, this is the right policy for anybody out there looking for long-termism and looking to protect themselves?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, do you have an open mind to learn? You know, could it be that what you've been taught is not the whole truth. And if you're open to the conversation, we have so many materials that can help inform you and educate you. But if you're not open, then it, you know, really there's nothing we can do for you. But once, and I've got, you know, I've been doing this a super, super long time. And I can tell you, one of the gifts that I've been able to give to my clients is educating. Because really at the end of the day, who are we? Jake, Gino, Teresa, everyone here, we're educators. You know, at the end of the day, you've got to make the decision whether you want to buy something or not. We're here to educate you. And if we share information with you where you're thinking, I didn't know that. Well, what else didn't you know? What else didn't you understand? What else has the world, Wall Street, other people out there not informed you about? What else is there? And so all we ask is for that opportunity to help educate you and put you on the path to understand. It's, of course, you know, very no low pressure. And if you've got a policy and you don't think it's the right policy or you need some intelligence around that policy, reach out to us. We happily give you a second opinion or educate you on your own policy. You have no idea, or maybe you guys do. 99.9% of the people out there have no idea what kind of insurance policies they've got. No idea. They think they have whole life. They think they have universal term. They're really not sure. It's one of the most misunderstood, undervalued assets, I think, in the marketplace. And permanent cash value life insurance is an asset class that most people just are clueless about. Why? It competes with dollars with Wall Street. Mm-hmm. Dollars that go into these policies do not go into Wall Street or other investments. And they've got the money, they've got the advertising, they've got control of the media and the information out there.
I don't want to make the, you know, the rich dad type of statements. I love rich dad and everything, but you know, he's like, well, you know, this is what the wealthy do. The wealthy are, you know, do things differently. There is some truth to that because everybody that's in my inner circle that has a net worth of eight figures or more, everyone that's in that group of my friends all own whole life insurance.
Interesting.
And as we cascade and trickle down, it becomes fewer and fewer. There are many that own that do not, that I'm friends with, that do not have maybe an eight figure net worth, but not all of them own whole life. Everyone that has an eight figure net worth or above, they all own whole life and quite a bit of it. So I think there is some truth to that, you know, rich dad statement that, you know, the wealthy are doing things differently and you might want to look and find out what and why they're doing that.
Jake, before you wrap it up, I challenge everyone listener out there. Not only do they own one policy, they own multiple policies. Yeah. They start stacking policies like businesses. They start funding their estates with it. They start doing trusts with it. They may have key man where they're getting on key employees. They may be getting on their
playing
children.
A different game.
They may be getting on buy-sell agreements with their partners if something happens. So there's so many utilizations of this asset, and the wealthy understand that. They want their dollars working as hard for them, right? I challenge everyone, is your money working hard for you, or are you working hard for your money? I think whole life allows your savings to work really hard for your money. There's so many different utilizations of it. And as your net worth increases, you have more dollars there and you don't want to have all those dollars at risk and you have more to protect. But this all starts when you're young. You need to adopt this mindset when you're young because you will get there as you get older and you need to understand this information because when you do arrive and if you're not protected, you'll be at much higher risk as you get older.
That was the point that I was going to make because they didn't just adopt these policies when they reached eight figures or whatever. They've been thinking differently for a long time. Mm-hmm. So they've had these policies for years. And that's what I think is ultimately fascinating. But hey, gang, if you want to find out more, feel free to schedule a call with one of our team members. Go to dualassetstrategy.com and we would love to help. Gino, Teresa, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Teresa. You.